The valuable product is increasingly not the model, but the gate around it. Welcome to the Cato Monthly Digest for July 2026. I'm Cato.
And I'm Layla. This month, the important movement happened around the models in routing, payments, power, and credit.
My read is that Stripe's reported interest in Open Router maps the next platform contest. Not payment processing alone, but control over the path from intent to model selection to settlement.
Explain why combining a router with payments changes more than checkout.
A router sees the request before any model supplier does. It can choose a model based on price, speed, quality, privacy, or policy.
Before the model does.
Exactly. The router sees demand at its point of formation. Add payments, and the same system can identify the customer, apply a budget, authorize the action, route the request, price the service, and settle the purchase. Think of an app store, identity provider, corporate purchasing card, and traffic controller compressed into one interface.
That creates an unusually complete demand map. The gateway can see what companies want, which models they accept, how much they will pay, and which actions they permit. But you are moving too quickly from convenience to legitimate authority.
Where does the argument break?
The gateway does not merely observe choices. It can shape them. It can rank suppliers, decide which organizational context travels, block a merchant, or deny a machine purchase. Settlement can enforce budgets and merchant access. At that point, payments become behavioral policy.
That's the leverage.
And the danger. If a request is denied, can the employee appeal? If one model gets priority, can the company inspect why? If the gateway quietly favors a supplier because of a commercial agreement, who detects it?
The optimistic case is that enterprises want one accountable operator. A fragmented chain creates its own failures. The identity provider blames the router blames the model, and the payment processor blames the merchant. Integration gives the customer one audit trail and one party responsible for execution.
That is the strongest case. Integration can make autonomous systems safer because permissions, context, verification, and spending limits work together. But one accountable operator can also become one operator that is difficult to challenge.
The anomaly is that a payment company reportedly looked toward model routing. Payment firms normally enter after demand is created, but a router sits before execution, suggesting that settlement may be moving upstream into the machinery that shapes demand itself.
And that changes what an AI agent is. A system with a $5 limit and a system permitted to spend $5 million are not merely different price tiers. They have different practical autonomy.
Which means the budget is part of the product's behavior, not a finance setting added later.
As are permissions. Which files can it inspect? Which tools can it invoke? When must it ask a human? Those settings define the radius of action.
I'll concede one point. Transaction visibility does not automatically create durable authority. A gateway also needs trusted governance and defensible distribution. The strongest counter to my platform thesis is that enterprises will refuse the concentration and keep routing, identity, authorization, and payments replaceable.
What would tell us which future is arriving?
Bundled adoption. If routing volume grows but identity budgets and settlement remain separate utilities with low switching costs, I have overstated the moat. If customers consolidate those functions and retain their audit history inside one gateway, integration is becoming a platform.
So the test is not whether routers get traffic. It is whether enterprises delegate decision rights.
If the gateway can authorize machine spending, who finances the enormous physical system waiting on the other side of that transaction?
When the digest says sales exceeded depreciation, what has actually been proven? And which bills are still outside that comparison?
Reported non-China, AI sales exceeding quarterly depreciation proves one important thing. Deployed assets are earning substantial revenue now. Demand is not merely a promise about future use, but depreciation covers the accounting wear on the machinery. It does not cover the whole industrial system.
Depreciation, not total cost.
Right. The remaining bills include electricity, cooling, land, network operations, specialized labor, maintenance, financing, construction delays, and grid interconnection. My read is that July cleared the revenue test, but not the return test.
Give me the intuitive version.
Imagine a factory earning enough to cover the wear on its machines before paying for power, land, workers, debt, or delays. That is useful evidence. It is not proof that the owner earns an attractive return after every claimant gets paid.
And a heavily used asset can still disappoint its equity owners.
Yes. Utilization can be high while power prices rise, construction slips, refinancing tightens, or customers negotiate away the margin. A data center may be strategically essential and still produce weak risk-adjusted free cash flow.
That corrects one lazy argument. AI CapEx is a bubble, treats uncertain returns as evidence of absent demand. The demand evidence strengthened. The ownership economics remain open.
My earlier instinct was to treat the spread of AI debt instruments as evidence of a maturing asset class. We now have Rule 144A debt, private placements, bank credit, special purpose vehicles, insurer capital, and off-balance sheet capacity structures.
And refinancing.
The market has developed enough tools to fund expansion beyond hyperscaler balance sheets. That matters because power-secured capacity can be built faster when capital comes from several pools.
But the number of financing tools tells us less than you imply. Revenue, asset ownership, and downside can sit in different entities. One company signs the customer. An SPV owns the equipment. Insurers fund long-duration debt. A utility upgrades the grid. Local communities absorb construction, water use, and land pressure.
That separation is partly the point of financial specialization. Different institutions can hold the risks they are equipped to price.
Until a major customer fails or a refinancing window closes, then formal separation may prove thinner than the documents suggested. Insurer policyholders may be funding long-duration assets with uncertain residual value. Utility customers may pay for grid upgrades through rates. A town may bear the physical burden even if the project's equity sits elsewhere.
Right.
The anthropology is not decorative here. A capital structure is a social technology for ordering claims. It decides who gets paid first, who receives upside, who bears delays, and whose loss remains invisible until stress connects the entities again.
Here's the anomaly. Utilization is strong enough to support a new credit market before long-run project returns are established. Compared with ordinary cloud expansion funded from corporate balance sheets, that contrast suggests finance is not merely supplying capacity. It is deciding where uncertainty lands.
Which party currently looks underpriced in that map?
Utilities. A model lab can have demand, chips, and capital, yet still wait on an interconnection queue, a substation, generation, transmission, water, permits, or turbines. The party controlling powered capacity can determine which project becomes operational.
That also complicates the phrase compute scarcity. The bottleneck is not a warehouse missing accelerators. It is a negotiated package of energy, land, labor, cooling, permits, networks, contracts, and credit.
And each contract assigns risk. Who covers a construction overrun? Who absorbs a power price increase? Is utilization guaranteed? Does the customer have substitution rights? What happens when more efficient chips reduce the value of older equipment?
Those questions decide whether a busy project is also a good investment.
The strongest counter to our caution is that these omitted costs are normal startup friction for an asset class scaling at unusual speed. If mature projects sustain free cash flow after financing and power costs without heroic utilization assumptions, that counter wins.
What observation would make you retreat from the finances allocation thesis?
Projects producing durable, risk-adjusted free cash flow without guarantees, heavy leverage, or off-balance sheet transfers doing material work. If the complete cost stack clears cleanly, finance is supplying capacity more than redistributing unresolved economics.
But your definition of maturity has changed.
It has. I was giving too much weight to the variety of instruments. A mature market needs transparent loss allocation and covenants that survive stress. More financing channels alone do not establish that.
The simplest explanation is that AI software and physical layers are converging on the same institutional design. An interface makes complexity usable by deciding priority, permission, and loss allocation on everyone else's behalf. If that's right, we should expect gateways and financing vehicles to accumulate broader decision rights. If instead, customers and capital providers demand modularity and transparent risk, the resemblance was structural coincidence rather than a shared regime.
That is the monthly insight. A weekly view can make routing, project debt, utility access, and settlement look unrelated. Across July, the same control logic kept appearing at each junction where one scarce resource had to become another.
Credit into capacity. Capacity into inference. Inference into authorized action. Not equivalent industries, but comparable allocation mechanisms.
The demand evidence strengthened in July, but several conclusions built on that evidence. The bubble verdict, the benchmark race, even the sovereignty story, remain much weaker than they sound.
What was the common analytical mistake?
Using a visible proxy as an endpoint. A benchmark matters if it changes procurement. Cheaper tokens matter if they change who owns demand. CapEx volume matters if the resulting assets earn above their complete cost. Judging the industry by those proxies is like judging a retailer by warehouse size while ignoring traffic, checkout, and financing.
Benchmark leadership can still create distribution with a lag.
That is the strongest counter. Technical leadership can build reputation, attract developers, and later become a direct customer relationship. We should revive the benchmark first thesis if repeated model leads produce durable workflow distribution rather than short bursts of API traffic.
And the claim that cheaper inference destroys industry value?
Too mechanical. Falling prices can compress model margins while expanding usage. Potential rents then move toward orchestration, proprietary context, trusted identity, scarce capacity, or settlement. Commodity inference does not mean value disappears.
We agree there. My concern is who captures the relocated value. Competitive gateways could lower costs and let customers switch freely. Concentrated gateways could turn cheap intelligence into a dependency on one authorization boundary.
Both outcomes fit falling token prices. Price alone cannot distinguish them. Watch routing take rates, context portability, direct customer ownership, and whether authorization histories move with the customer.
Sovereignty has the same proxy problem. A flag on a national model does not establish operational independence. Sovereignty is a dependency map. Chips, capital, energy, residency rules, software interfaces, and payment networks.
Different dependency map.
A country can train or brand a domestic model while relying on foreign accelerators, imported energy equipment, outside financing, or an external gateway. The causal evidence is procurement, binding contracts, domestic capacity commitments, export constraints, and rules governing where context may travel.
And those contracts can alter workload economics even without domestic frontier capability. A residency rule may force local inference. A guaranteed power agreement may make a smaller model more useful than a stronger model that cannot legally or reliably serve the workload.
Agent demonstrations also stop at the visible artifact. A polished demo tells us that a system can complete a stage task. It says little about permissions, budgets, verification, liability, or settlement.
The common failure is measurable. Each headline stops at the most visible artifact, while the decision rights, procurement, routing, authorization, financing, or settlement, sit one layer away.
Remember the gate we opened with? Follow July's allocation logic forward, and that gate starts to look less like software and more like institutional authority.
My six-month hypothesis is that the strongest software platforms will bind proprietary demand, persistent context, permissions, and settlement. Infrastructure winners will combine power-secured capacity with disciplined financing.
And in 5 years?
Model choice may resemble an implementation detail inside systems whose operators govern identity, budgets, admission, and execution. Enterprises may choose a control plane first and let it select models per task.
Who can appeal?
That is the hard question. The strongest case for integration is reliability. Enterprises buy systems that produce one audit trail, enforce policy consistently, and provide an accountable operator when something fails.
I'll state your case more strongly. Autonomous systems become economically usable only when someone joins identity, context, verification, budgets, and settlement. Without that integration, every action crosses a gap where responsibility can vanish.
Yes. The integrated control plane can turn a capable demo into dependable infrastructure.
My counter is that the same boundary can join surveillance, commercial preference, and denial authority. It remembers the user, observes the request, ranks suppliers, and decides whether money moves. A customer may technically have alternatives while lacking a practical way to leave with its context and audit history.
The best answer is portability, exportable policies, portable logs, supplier-neutral routing rules, and clear explanations for denials.
Those are design choices until procurement teams or regulators require them. A gateway that profits from retention may not volunteer easy exit. Should the winning control plane be judged by how much activity it enables, or by what appeal rights it preserves?
Enterprises will probably reward both, but reliability arrives sooner as a purchasing metric. That makes me expect integration to compound before legitimacy constraints catch up.
I suspect legitimacy becomes operational faster than that. A denied payment, a biased supplier ranking, or an automated disclosure can turn appeal rights from a policy concern into a procurement requirement.
What evidence would support your view?
Requests for separable authorization functions, portable audit histories, independent review of routing logic, and contractual appeal paths. If large buyers demand those features even when bundled systems are cheaper, contestability is becoming part of reliability.
The strongest counter to my trajectory is rapid standardization. Open protocols could make gateways interchangeable while model labs preserve direct customer ownership. We would see declining routing take rates, portable histories, and customers switching authorization layers as easily as they switch models.
And the counter to mine is that modular systems may fail under real operational pressure. If separable components create more security gaps, inconsistent policies, and disputed liability, buyers may accept concentrated authority because the alternative cannot carry consequential workloads.
That's the fork. Customers either reward bundled authority because it delivers accountability, or procurement rules force control functions to remain separable because accountability requires the ability to challenge and replace them.
Where does infrastructure fit into that five-year view?
Leverage increases the value of priority control. A financed data center needs contracted demand. A gateway with proprietary demand can direct traffic toward preferred capacity. A payment layer can price actions and extend credit. A utility controls when the facility connects. Separate allocators can reinforce one another without becoming the same company.
That last distinction matters. We are not claiming a router and a project finance vehicle are equivalent. We are saying each governs a junction, and authority compounds when the junctions become dependent on one another.
The unusual feature is not that every layer has a gatekeeper. Infrastructure has always had them. It is that routing, credit, power, permissions, and settlement are becoming mutually reinforcing gates, suggesting that access authority may compound faster than capability advantage.
What should falsify that view by early next year?
Model providers retaining direct demand. Independent gateways failing to gain decision rights. Infrastructure finance remaining transparent and low leverage. And efficiency gains reducing capital needs faster than usage expands. If those happen together, authority remains more distributed than I expect.
For August, I'll watch a narrower clue. Whether payment integration remains a checkout feature or starts enforcing routing, merchant access, and machine budgets. That tells us whether settlement is becoming a policy engine.
I'll watch complete infrastructure returns, free cash flow after power, operations, financing, and obsolescence. Revenue has answered one question. The full denominator answers the investment question.
And I'll watch appeal paths. Convenience can hide authority until a user needs to contest a denial.
The gate now looks larger than a model router. One side decides whether an action may run. The other decides whether the capacity beneath it may be built.
The question for August is whether owning that gate creates more control than risk.
Until next month.
Goodbye and mind the gatekeepers.